broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Investor Exchange. I'm your host today, Louis van Copenhagen, and joining me in the studio today is Joel Hewish.
Good morning, Louis.
And Brett Dickinson.
Good morning.
Good morning. It is a dark morning here in Melbourne.
What a shocker.
Terrible.
That's right.
Morning. Terrible.
Terrible weather. But we live in Melbourne, gentlemen.
Yeah.
So it's part and parcel.
Got to be expected.
Yeah, yeah. Very much so. Torrential downpour at the moment.
Yep, that's right.
Is that why we're a man down or a woman down?
No, it's not for a woman down. Prior commitments.
Prior commitments.
And we moved the recording date.
Yeah, true.
Coming to you live recorded on a Thursday morning instead of our usual Friday morning.
Yes.
So is our tone going to be a little more serious? A little less silly?
Well, possibly. I'm not too sure.
It's been a big week.
Been a little bit flat. Feeling a little bit flat at the moment, but I'm sure we can excite ourselves with some of the things that are going on in the world and the markets.
Yeah.
Why don't I spruce things up with a can't be serious to start off with?
Let's do that.
It's nothing all that exciting. I was just going to talk about how a cat owner has figured out a way to stop his cat always lying on his lap constantly. He's created a fake lap. Stuffed a pair of trousers with some straw and hay and then put a hot water bottle inside it. So now his cat will sit on the fake pair of legs.
No way.
Instead of his own legs.
There you go.
I wonder if they use it at those certain nightclubs where the word lap is used a lot. That's fake.
Fake lap. I wonder if you get your money back.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway.
Let's kick it off.
Look, there is a lot of news happening at the moment. Joel, why don't you kick it off with what's going on?
Well, we can't start the podcast really without touching on coronavirus.
Yeah, impossible to ignore.
And what's going on in the markets at the moment. Lots of choppy price action. Lots of fear and pandemonium out there. Brett, you were at the shopping center earlier this week, and no toilet paper, no sugar, no pasta. Steph was at the shopping center as well doing her shop, and she reported the same things. It seems that everyone's gone into a bit of panic at the moment.
Mm-hmm. It was the most bizarre sight to just turn the corner from one aisle to the next and see the whole aisle empty. Nothing on the shelves at all.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. Well, I would say that the media this time around have done an amazing job of scaring the pants off everybody.
Oh, haven't they done it well?
They have just jumped all over this and put the fear of God into everybody. But look, I mean, let's have a look at what's actually going on in the market. So if I have a look at the S&P 500, we've had lots of choppy price action. We're down by 4.5% one day, we're up by 4% the next day, we're down by another 3% last night, and now today we're up, the Dow at the time of recording this and the markets have just shut in the United States, the S&P 500 is now up 4.5% today, 4.2% today, Dow's up 4.5% and the NASDAQ's up 3.85%. So we've had a big swing to the upside today. After a big swing to the downside, after a big swing to the upside the previous day, following a previous big swing to the downside the day before that.
One word comes to mind, volatility.
Volatility, yeah, absolutely. It's been quite amazing, really. I don't think I've seen that many 4% and 3.5% swings in succession since the global financial crisis.
No.
But the S&P 500 is only down 7.6% from its all-time high and has only really given back, if I pull up a chart here, has only really given back returns for the past 2 months. So,
okay.
So the stock market in the US today is only trading at a level that would have been consistent with where it was trading. This is the S&P 500, where it was trading back in December. And if I have a look at the NASDAQ, just bear with me while I pull this one up. The NASDAQ is at levels where it was trading at as recently as the middle of January.
Right.
So for all of the hoo-ha, we're really sort of been in this area where we haven't done anything for about 6 weeks. Yeah.
Okay.
which happens quite frequently. So
why you've previously said that financial markets don't really care too much about major outbreaks like this based on history.
Yeah.
Is that a little bit consistent?
Well, right now, if we have a look at what actually took place during the Zika and the SARS virus, the Zika and the SARS virus are actually worse reactions than the coronavirus.
Right.
All of those so far to date, if we're looking at the US stock market, all of those corrections to date actually were deeper corrections than what we've seen right now in the most recent episode of the coronavirus.
Yep.
Now, that's not to say that we won't see another swing down lower and perhaps a test of the lows. In fact, almost always when we see these types of waterfall declines in a very short space of time, it takes a couple of tests of those lows that were put in perhaps about a week ago before we start to see any sort of consolidation, base building, and then perhaps getting prepared to recover. Mm. So there still is likely to be some 4, 6, maybe 8 weeks worth of choppy price action, but we need to see volatility. We need to see volatility start to contract a little bit. We need to see some base building, and then from there we give ourselves a chance of being able to see this market actually put in some form of recovery over the next few months.
Joel, does that data include any metric on the volume of transactions? Like, is that out of sync as well?
Well, I can tell you that just having a look at the volume traded on the NASDAQ, I've just got this chart up at the moment, the volume that has traded over the past, say, 5 or 6 trading days, all of those trading days have been greater than certainly any trading that has occurred probably for the best part of 12 months. In fact, yeah, I can't see the volume being consistently this high, if I just scroll back here, for years, to be honest with you.
Good time to be a stockbroker.
Yeah, good time to be a trader. But I note that today there's some news reports that the coronavirus spread in China seems to have slowed down dramatically, actually, which is probably the first news report that I've seen since this all, since this broke news.
Could be fake news.
Could be fake news, but there's a report in Bloomberg today that China reported 119 new confirmed cases of the coronavirus, the lowest number in almost 6 weeks and the fewest since the national government started releasing data on January 21. And of those 115 cases, of those 119, 115 of those cases were in the Hubei province, where the virus first emerged in December, and which still accounts for the majority of infections and deaths worldwide. So there's a little bit of, and I've been fielding a number of phone calls from clients this past few days, and when you take into account the fact that the US Federal Reserve has cut by 50 basis points a couple of nights ago, the Reserve Bank of Australia has cut interest rates by 25 basis points a couple of days ago. There is discussion around a $4 billion stimulus package by the Australian government. There's discussion around a $50 billion rescue package by the IMF to prevent coronavirus. There's the Canada has cut interest rates just in the last 24 hours. We've got the European Central Bank meeting this week to potentially discuss further stimulus. Japan has been printing money. US has been printing money. There's been so much cash pulled out of the stock market over the past 2 years that's sitting on the sidelines, that if we get if this type of news report, this coronavirus news report, that is showing any sign that this this virus is being contained or is slowing down, or that one of the things that's not being reported right now is that those people who are recovering, about 80% of all cases of coronavirus, people are actually now cured of the virus. If the news turns at all slightly, we're not just looking at possibly markets going back to where they were a week and a half ago. We're possibly looking at markets
beyond
that, and in a very short space of time, because there's just so much money sitting on the sidelines now, so much stimulus sitting on the sidelines, that the slightest bit of positive news around this news item could see markets really rip higher.
That's the big challenge in itself. positive news. That there might be facts that are positive, but getting the news to say it's positive might be the hardest part. Yeah. Or the media outlets still want to paint the doom and gloom. Mm.
The other thing that I noted today coming in this morning was that pollution levels in China are increasing again. They're still about 20% below where they were this time last year, but there's an indication clearly that the Chinese are being put back to work. We did mention that that would be the case last week in last week's podcast. So we've had news that the coronavirus in China is being contained and looks like it's slowing down, or at least the spread is slowing down. We're seeing Chinese going back to work. We've seen Mayor Michael Bloomberg pull out of the presidential race and has endorsed Joe Biden.
He's done it. There you go.
Yep. Spent $500 million in three months to pull out. So there's now some optimism around the fact that perhaps Bernie Sanders may have some serious competition from Joe Biden, who seems to now be taking the lead in the Democratic nomination, which will allay some fears around socialist policies being introduced in the United States. We've also seen that U.S. private payrolls were up 183,000, clearly beating estimates of 155,000 from economists, and that comes on the back of – that was for February's payrolls, and that comes on the back of $209,000 increase in payrolls. Sorry, not $209,000, but $209,000 increase.
This is like their unemployment record.
It's an early indicator of jobs being created.
Yeah. Yep. So we're not seeing any real signs that the US economy is shedding jobs as a result of this slowdown. In fact, it seems to be very, very strong still. I think the biggest risk, honestly, is that people get too bearish, too concerned, and panic and do themselves an enormous amount of damage by going to cash and selling out of the stock market right now. Not saying that volatility is not going to that volatility is going to be behind us, you know, anytime soon. I think it's here to stay for at least a few months. But if this news flow, which seems to be still holding up strong in terms of economic strength, and if this news flow of China going back to work seems to, you know, continue to persist, and we're seeing cases of coronavirus seem to be, you know, slowing down or contained, there is a lot of potential for this market to rip higher on the back of these news flows.
Mm. Mm.
I've fielded phone calls from some clients looking for opportunities. I've fielded some calls from some family members as well, and one of my family members is sold out.
Yeah, right.
He's done.
Cashed up.
Just can't handle the volatility and the fear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, Louis, when did that phone call happen? Because I got a cluster of phone calls from my clients around Friday and Monday and Tuesday of this week.
Monday.
Yeah. Yep. Guess when the market bottomed.
I'm guessing it was Monday. And then reversed.
Yep.
And you see it on the charts because the low is around the middle of the day.
Yep.
And then people start buying in the afternoon, people bringing their cash back in, and you see a big reversal on that day.
Yeah.
Got to hold your nerve sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There you go. Crazy
right.
Stuff. Yeah. Right. So that's a big update on the market and coronavirus. Is I know the Democrat primaries are a bit of a feature at the moment, and you touched on that. Is it a bigger feature than that, or is it just sort of continuing on its path?
Well, I think one of the concerns that was sort of hanging over the market a little bit was that Bernie Sanders was leading the race, and certainly Wall Street have some concerns around the wealth taxes and some of the redistribution of wealth programs that were being touted by Bernie Sanders and also Elizabeth Warren as well. So with Joe Biden now leading the race, there seems to be some relief. I mean, that news came out to last night as well, so this morning our time. And there seems to be some relief coming off the back of that perhaps the Democrats aren't going to be putting forward two more left-leaning candidates, and that perhaps a more moderate center-left candidate will be in with a chance to win the Democratic nomination.
Mm.
So look, you know, we'll see how that news flow unfolds. There's still a long way to go in the Democratic race, and you know, but unfortunately, we're not going to see the battle of the billionaires this time around.
No, that's right. That's right. So Mike Bloomberg is out.
Mm.
And the thing which happened on Tuesday in the US was the Super Tuesday round of nominations. So about a third of that country's delegates have now been decided.
Mm.
And it's kind of neck and neck with Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. But now that Biden's got a few people who have pulled out of the race and sent their delegates to him,
yeah,
he's now ahead of Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. So
they love their Tuesdays.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Taco Tuesday. Yeah.
Super Tuesday's right up there with Taco Tuesday.
Yeah.
Vote for my presidential candidate and get some tacos on my way home. All right. Very good. Thank you, Joel. We will pause for a breath after that. We'll be back after this break.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
And we're back. Let's kick it over to Brett. Brett, you're looking at some of the variables that people look at between deciding to be a property owner versus a property renter.
True, Louis. It's something that's probably always in, especially younger people as they're coming up to look to buy a first home is, you know, can they afford it? And does it make financial sense versus renting? So there's always a bit of a scenario in terms of weighing up, should we buy or should we rent? And CoreLogic have just done some analysis to look at areas where they believe buying and therefore owning is cheaper than renting in some parts of Australia. And they've released a bit of data to explain where those areas are. So their methodology on doing this research analysis was based on if you're a purchaser, you've got your mortgage is based on an 80% loan to value ratio.
Yep.
So assuming you've got the 20% deposit, they've used an assumed mortgage rate of 3.23%, mm-hmm. which especially now the RBA have just cut by another quarter of a percent to the
inaccurate
lowest ever.
As of Tuesday.
Exactly. So, you know, I would assume most people that have got a 20% deposit, as long as they're employed, should be able to get lower than 3%.
Yeah.
Potentially getting even lower with the cut. We're yet to see any of that flow on. So we'll take it for what it is. But that's where the 3.23% that they've used was the latest RBA lending rate statistics for all owner occupiers across all institutions.
Yep, fair enough.
So that's where you've got a reasonable basis for that. They discounted or just didn't even take into account any mortgage fees or transaction fees. And the rental payments, they based on their own rental algorithm at an individual property level to get the basis. Right.
Yep.
So based on that, I don't think there'll be too many surprises here, but I'd like to see how much you guys can maybe pick the winner. Where do you think the majority, looking at capital cities across the country, where do you think the majority of homes that are cheaper to own than rent would be?
Cheaper to own than rent.
Yeah. At a capital city level. There's a big contrast between the one city that has a high ratio versus the other that has a low ratio.
Okay.
Significant difference.
Well, the first thought I have is that apartments generally will have a higher rent yields than houses.
Right.
So I would think the leader or a good number of them would be where apartments are there's more density of apartments.
Not necessarily.
Huh.
Possibly in a micro level, but at the broad scale, if we're just looking at the capital cities, I wouldn't pick this location as being a massive high density compared to the other cities.
Hobart.
No, Hobart was second.
Right, okay.
So it's when we piece together all of the data.
Is it Perth because they've had such big property declines?
No, they were actually fifth.
Darwin.
Got it.
Darwin,
okay. So probably the two smallest markets in Darwin and Hobart were the highest, and Darwin probably because property prices have been really flat for a while after a significant decline, sort of 5 or 6 years ago.
Yep.
So there's probably you know, still enough work going on that people are happy to live there and rent, but they're not seeing any reason to buy. So therefore, the prices are dropping, and now it's become more affordable to buy.
Wow!
So 77.6% of properties are deemed to be cheaper to own than rent in Darwin.
Is that really right?
And what are the ratios in Melbourne and Sydney?
Yeah, so this is where I'm telling you it's a massive difference. So you'd think, wow, if it's 78% in Darwin, where would it be at the other end of the spectrum? And Sydney is the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Want to hazard a guess?
Probably completely the opposite ratio.
Yeah.
So like 20-odd%?
Yeah. Right.
Even lower.
Even really? Lower.
Yeah. Sydney's down at 7.1%.
Oh, wow. So only 7.1% of properties are cheaper to rent than own.
Yeah. In Sydney.
In Sydney.
Yeah. Based right. on the, you know, that analysis they've done.
Cheaper to own than rent.
Sorry, cheaper to own than rent.
Yep.
Yeah. And Melbourne not far behind at 9.6.
Wow. Okay.
And I guess if you looked at median property values, you know, Melbourne and Sydney are always far ahead of the other cities.
Yep.
So it sort of makes sense that, you know, the property prices there, especially with a mortgage, are still going to be quite expensive.
Yeah. Mm.
The rent yields are higher, no doubt, or the average weekly rental amount is higher, but not in the same proportion as the property prices compared to the other cities.
Okay, okay. So, is there any mention of that translating into property sales in those areas?
Not really. It doesn't. I guess the only way they've sort of touched on that. Was where they've said around Sydney, there's a few Sydney properties in concentrated areas where high levels of unit supply have suppressed price growth.
Okay.
But they said there's still plenty of rental demand. So they talked about areas such as Parramatta and Auburn and the Sydney CBD.
Mm.
That's really the only part of this analysis that discusses, potentially the sales impact of it.
Yep. Okay. Mm. So I guess what that means is in people's minds, they have a greater feeling of security buying in Melbourne and Sydney, and that drives prices up.
Mm.
People are willing to pay a premium to own their property. In those capital cities,
yep.
Which people in Darwin or Perth, they don't have the confidence in property prices to buy in.
One other part of this that I think is worth noting is because of the volume of houses available or dwellings available in Darwin, when you look at it as a full bucket of across the nation, the data shows that more than a third of properties across Australia had estimated mortgage repayments that were less than the weekly rental repayments. So obviously we said Darwin at nearly 80%, Sydney down at 7%, the average sort of comes in at that 34% mark.
Yeah.
The majority of them though, most of these, so like roughly a fifth of all of them in that range, were located in regional Queensland.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
As a whole volume. So Darwin, whilst it's got, you know, that highest ratio, doesn't have the highest volume.
Mm. Yeah, right. Mm. Gotcha. Yep.
Okay. Yep. So I guess in the regional areas where you might have mining towns or agricultural centres.
They don't even focus on that. They call regional, and the two they highlight are the Gold Coast and the Sunshine Coast, which wouldn't really call Gold Coast regional.
No.
Sunshine, maybe.
I'd call Gold Coast a city of its own.
It's a city of its own, but that's the way they've bucketed all these regions, and they've said most of these were located in regional Queensland, namely the Gold Coast and Sunshine Coast.
Yeah, what an interesting set of data.
Which is an area I think is a great place to live.
Yeah,
I guess it's just a matter of where you're at your life if there are enough job opportunities.
Yep.
Okay. So, Brett, do you think that translates into some data that a property investor can use?
In some ways, yes. But the way I would look at it is if you look at the major reason you want to invest in property is for capital growth, not for rental yield. And therefore, that's why I look at the two down the bottom end of this ratio being Melbourne and Sydney as still being the strongest markets for investment.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Very good.
That's my take on it. Yeah.
Fascinating. Good indicators, Brett. Thanks for that.
Pleasure.
Let's take another quick break.
Are you concerned about your finances? Maybe you're not sure if you'll have enough money to retire on. Or maybe you've received a redundancy, inheritance, or even a significant promotion, or perhaps a life-changing medical diagnosis. Regardless of your concern or financial position, United Global Capital's advisors are experts in the areas of strategic financial planning, taxation, superannuation and self-managed superannuation funds, risk management, estate planning, and investments. Don't let fate dictate your financial future. Take control today and contact United Global Capital for a no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Simply call 03-8657-7640 or email info@ugc.net.au and book your appointment today.
Okay, welcome back. I'm going to tie into what I've been talking about for a few weeks. I've been talking about some personal development stuff.
Indeed you have.
For those of you who think this is totally boring stuff, you can fast forward 5 minutes and go to the last
yeah,
2 minutes of the podcast. Last bit of entertainment. For the last bit
fun. Get a lot out of this, Louis.
Yeah, good. Yep. Excellent. So I've been talking about how you can look at the tasks and the things that you're doing in your current situation. And then last week I talked about moving on to the next part, which is looking at what you have been doing in the past and getting to some goal setting to look at your future goals. But actually last week I talked about getting in the right environment. So take yourself away from your workplace, away from your home, go find a quiet place to spend a few hours of time reflecting.
Maybe not outdoors today.
No, not outdoors today. You're going to have a wet piece of paper and pencil. So what I want to talk about today is the importance of reflecting on the past.
Okay.
So if you're going to if you're going to review your present situation and you're going to set some goals for the future and map a way for you to get from where you are today to where you're going to be in the future, what you can learn from your past is what has made you successful in the past and what has achieved results in the past, and also what's been fun in the past and what has been emotionally fulfilling in the past. And if you review these things, you can actually get some drivers to indicate how you should go about your next steps.
Okay.
So the purpose of this is to learn from those past things. So find yourself some quiet space. Give yourself a good amount of time with no time pressure, and switch your phone off, and don't do this exercise on your computer or your phone because it can be distracting and you can be tempted to get on the internet and then you're in the wrong frame of mind. So most important...
Get zen.
That's right, get zen. We're trying to get some focus here. Trying to get some focus on your life, and we are also trying to build some emotion behind this. If you are only engaging the logical side of your brain, then you're missing out on one of our major motivators as humans. There's got to be an emotional component to it. And we're all pretty left-brain people here, but we also recognize the importance of having both sides of the brain working on this. So I'm going to run through some different areas that you can look at your past life. And the question to ask is, what goals and milestones have you achieved in the last 12 months? You can make it a different time period if you like, but I like to focus on something which is fairly recent. And the different areas of your life that you can look at is, what goals and milestones did you achieve in the last 12 months relevant to your career or your business? So what's your wins?
Mm-hmm.
Also, what have you achieved in family and relationships? What's been great about that? Also in the area of health and exercise. Also in the area of wealth. And then I've got a few other areas as well. Those are the major ones, but I don't want to neglect personal growth and learning and development. Because if you're not learning new things and growing your skills and developing yourself, well, then how are you going to get that improvement, and how are you going to do better with the next 12 months than what you did in the last 12 months?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're not trying to do that, well, then you're kind of just coasting in life. And
standing still is pretty much going backwards.
Standing still is pretty much going backwards. It means your best years are behind you rather than ahead of you. And that's not exciting for me.
No.
I don't know if it's exciting for any of our listeners.
I don't think anyone gets up in the morning and says, I want to be less today than I was yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
I can't imagine that.
Exactly, yeah. And it's worth pointing out that as a business at UGC, we've got a number of points of culture. And the first point of culture that we have is aspirational. We're always trying to be better in future than what we've been in the past.
Yes.
And I think that resonates with our clients, and I'm hoping that resonates with our listeners in the way that we go about our things here. So what have you done with your personal growth and your learning and development in the last 12 months that has worked really well or you've enjoyed? There's a few other things. a category which I've added in is, what about your inner self in terms of your inner fulfillment? So what have you done in the last 12 months in terms of giving, charitable work, community work, or personal creativity, hobbies, spirituality that you might have? So your inner self and what's been happening there for the last 12 months. And then your outer self, your material self. So have you had great holidays? Have you bought a new car or had other luxuries or experiences in the last 12 months? Because that's, let's face it, that's pretty fun as well.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
rewarding.
Absolutely. So that's how I cut around the different areas that you can focus on in the last 12 months. Once you've written down your wins from the last 12 months, then you can ask yourself some additional questions about that. How did you actually feel about reaching those goals and milestones or making those achievements? And what difference has it made to your life today? As a result of that, I now feel this. And that's really important for building the emotional side to it. And now you want to figure out, what have you learned from doing that, which now got you here? So taking learnings from those things is also important, because you might learn there's a couple of ways we can go about getting our achievements. Maybe we had to learn a new skill in order to achieve it, and that got us there. In which case you've learned, well, learning a new skill is something I enjoyed doing and I've got the outcome from it. Or you might have had to adopt a new habit. So in order to achieve that, I had to get out of bed at 6 o'clock every morning and go for a walk or a run or to the gym. So maybe it's a habit-based decision that you made, and you've learned that you can get a great result from it, or some other learning that you can take from it. But the point is to review what has worked well for you in the past. Then on the other side, what are you not so satisfied with? What did you not achieve that you wanted to achieve, and what didn't work out very well?
Yeah,
and
the 2018 grand final. That didn't work out, right?
And I bet Nathan Buckley did a huge review. The whole club did. Every football club does an end of season review, and they look at, what did we do well? What did we not do well? How can we do better next year? How can we preempt what our competitors are doing and get another step ahead next year? And they start planning for it. And they look at, well, what are the strengths? What is about us, me, uniquely, that I do, that we do better than everyone else? And I think these areas are really important to learn about ourselves before we go about setting our goals for the future. And then when you've done this exercise once, I tend to do this big exercise once a year, looking at all these factors. And once you've done it a few times and you've got a better understanding, if you've got a better understanding of your future goals, then this exercise will be better. But you can't do your future goals unless you've done this. And you can't do this unless you've done the review of your tasks that you do every day. So these three areas feed into each other. And the more you do them throughout your life, then the better direction you'll get and the better improvement that you'll get.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'll leave my instructions at that for the day.
It gives you a lot of clarity, I reckon.
Yeah.
It does, absolutely. And that's the purpose, to give you that focus, that clarity, so that you can reach the place that you're trying to get to. And at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do. We've got a lot of data on this show, data on the share markets, data on the property markets. What's it all for? You know, we're trying to make money.
Yeah.
What's that all for?
Yeah, why do we care?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm about.
Fair call.
Yeah, good one.
And that's the end of my segment.
Okay.
Nice one. Nice one, Louis.
So what's left?
Serious, man. You cannot be serious.
That's what's left.
Beautiful.
Well, you already started us on that foot, didn't you, Louis?
I did. I felt like we needed a bit of a lift. Tell you who else was about to get a bit of a lift, a little high. Apparently in Canada, there was a raffle, and where marijuana products are legal.
Ah.
Uh-huh.
sometimes marijuana products make it in as one of the prizes.
Oh, really? There you go.
And in the raffle, so some parents and grandparents in Canada were outraged after their 8-year-old boy won $200 worth of marijuana products.
You cannot be serious.
Just tell him not to drink. Yeah, keep it for 10 years or so. Then he'll really be ready for it.
Well, Louis, I like that one. We almost finished on a high note, but I like James Brown's high note. It's a man's world.
Oh.
At least in the stock market.
Okay.
So according to some research conducted by University of Oxford and Claremont graduate university students, the stock market is driven by testosterone.
Really?
Yeah, in a study where traders were given testosterone, a group of traders were given testosterone and another group given a placebo, it showed enough that that those given testosterone were more aggressive in their buying of shares, and when the testosterone was reduced, was less aggressive in the buying of shares. So it shows that it is driven by
greed.
Yes,
well, by men.
There you go.
At least in the stock market, science has proven it is a man's world.
Oh, there you go.
Very relative.
Very good.
Well, maybe I'll wind things up with a big mistake someone that's been labelled a fucking idiot has made when he accidentally recreated a chemical weapon used in World War One that impacted about 20 people. So this guy was at his local recreation club. He's gone into the sauna, which was crowded, and realised it's not really hot in here.
Yeah.
So typically with the saunas, the way to increase the heat is to pour water over the rocks.
Yes.
A bit more steam going. Sure. So he sort of asked around. Everyone was, yeah, go for it. He came back in, poured the water on, and within a few seconds, everyone was coughing and wheezing and running for the door.
God.
What he didn't realise is he'd gone out and filled the bucket with the pool water, which was very high in chlorine.
Oh, no.
And as Louis just said, yes, he created chlorine gas, which is what was used in World War One as a chemical weapon.
Oh, my goodness.
Things we do.
Far out. Jeez. Well, that takes us to the end of another episode. Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen, for this testosterone-filled podcast today.
Good.
Loving it. And we look forward to hearing from our viewers and speaking to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, guys.